Welcome to Issues and Ideas on Public Radio KCBX. I'm your host, Katherine Johnson, and with me today is Chrissy LeBlanc-Selder, gerontologist, mother of three, and author of the book, When You're Older. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi, Kathy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I have before me a very colorful, wonderfully illustrated children's book. Can you tell us about this book and how it came to be?
Sure. Well, the book is entitled When You're Older and self-published by me and my partner here at Consumer Advocates for RCFE Reform. And it's written with little people in mind, about ages 4 to 6. And it speaks directly to kids, explaining to them in their own terms about the aging process. So since they've had some experience with it by now, by 4 or 6, one of the first examples I give in the book is how at first they could just crawl, and now they can walk and ride a bike, and they can anticipate as they grow older riding a bike with their friends to, you know, exciting destinations in the neighborhood. And my goal and intention with the story was to reframe kids' perspective on the aging process, that it's not just a physical process. It's natural, it's lifelong, and every older adult they see walking around was at one point a child, and that children can expect to grow older as well, and that you don't become one-dimensional or obsolete, but that, in fact, aging is an opportunity to keep growing and becoming more interesting through all of the life experiences that you accumulate along the way.
Is this book also somewhat of an attempt to counteract maybe some of the negative stereotypes that we hold in our culture about aging, the aging process, older people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, our culture is for sure obsessed with anti-aging. And so when I actually originally had done this book in graduate school as part of a research project, I researched ageism in children's literature, which is not a new phenomenon. Many other people and academics have researched it. And I found the same thing that they had, was that older aging, and well, particularly older adults, are either not represented in children's literature, they're not main characters, they're assigned limited roles, either they're always a grandparent or they're the Wicked Witch. If you can think of a lot of Disney's portrayal of villains, they have, you know, wrinkles, or they're carrying a cane, or they're the fairy godmother. And so to develop older adults in literature, people also rely on stereotypes. They're either frail or they're grouchy. And so children really relate to the books that they're reading, they identify with the main character in the book. And so if they're reading children's literature and the older adult is always presented in this way, it really distorts their image. And then out in society, they're getting the same message, where everyone doesn't want to grow older. And so you can imagine why there's such negative associations with older adults for everybody, because it's just an image that's portrayed and accepted in a way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Where, if one wanted to purchase a copy of When You're Older, where could they do that?
A website called Consumer Advocates for RCFE Reform. We have an order form on our website, or our phone number is there. And the web address is www.rcfereform.org. And all proceeds from the sale of the book go to fund Consumer Advocates, or CAR, as we call it, our mission.
So tell us about CAR, Chrissy.
CAR is a new watchdog/advocacy. We're a nonprofit and started by me and a fellow gerontologist that I met in graduate school. RCFE stands for assisted living. So our ultimate goal is to be the objective voice for consumers who are shopping for assisted living facilities. At present, the information that consumers can find when they Google assisted living is provided by either facilities themselves or placement agencies who have a vested interest in getting a consumer's business because they have contracts with facilities, or industry organizations provide information. So there's a lot of subjective information, but not a lot of objective information for consumers trying to make an informed placement decision. So through our experiences, mine, I've worked in facilities, and Chris has placed her mother in one in years past, There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes and a lot of facts that consumers don't know that are even out there or that they have access to, things like public records and just practices that are performed by the state. So we created a website that educates consumers on how to find the facts, how to use the facts to evaluate facilities. And, you know, a second part of our mission is to call for regulatory reform to improve state oversight and facility accountability. But for the consumer, it's just a clearinghouse of information, factual, objective information on this care option.
That sounds excellent. Again, the website address is www.rcfereform.org. Again, a clearinghouse website for information on assisted living and exploring that option. Again, you're listening to Issues and Ideas on Public Radio KCBX. I'm your host, Katherine Johnson, and we are talking today with gerontologist Christy Selder. Christy, can you get into a little bit about some of the information that is contained on your website? Give our listeners an idea more specifically about the information that they might find there. For example, what defines an assisted living facility and what makes it different from, for example, a skilled nursing facility?
Okay, that a lot of people do confuse those two. So assisted living is originally designed on a social model where it's the type of place where older adults who have dependency issues would come and live together in a congregate setting, and there would be staff that would provide care and supervision with things like getting dressed or preparing meals or general housekeeping, maybe managing your medication, but the in a home-like environment.
Mm-hmm.
And also some small nuanced things is that skilled nursing facility is a medical model. It's more of a hospital-like setting. You're going to have people there who have dependency issues, but they're also going to have medical issues that make their situation a little bit more complicated or maybe behavioral issues. So the significant difference is the non-medical versus medical. Some other more, I guess, specific differences would be they're regulated by two different agencies.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Social Services regulates assisted living. The Department of Health regulates skilled nursing. Assisted living is private pay presently in California predominantly, and skilled nursing is private pay, but it also takes Medi-Cal and Medicare.
Okay.
Let me think what else. And the cost is pretty significant, the difference. Assisted living can range from $3,000 to $5,000 a year, whereas skilled nursing can be, you know, $7,000 to $8,000 a year.
Okay. Now, talking about medical versus non-medical settings, it seems that might be difficult to ascertain. When somebody's getting older, at a minimum, it seems like as people get older, there might be issues with things like high blood pressure, you know, kind of some things that tend to develop as people get older oftentimes. How does one make that distinction or make that decision whether to veer toward a non-medical versus a more medical solution?
Well, it's become really gray, and it's a complicated question to answer because, you know, the concept of assisted living is that you can age in place. So the regulations are written so that you can stay there. They're allowed to do pretty much anything a skilled nursing facility can do, provided they have an appropriately skilled professional doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say you have diabetes. In an assisted living facility, the staff, unless they're a nurse, can only help you do your injection, versus in a skilled nursing facility, the staff, if it was an RN, could actually do your injection for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a challenge, because not only are you placing someone at the beginning with the specific criteria of needs, but they are going to age and their needs are going to advance, and so you kind of have to factor that in when you what you can anticipate your needs to be, that you might have to move, you might not. It's also become the risk, I think, has increased in living in an assisted living facility because of that, because they're not required to have nurses on staff. There are no staffing ratios. You can find, or we're finding in our research, that a lot of people are getting into assisted living, which is becoming mini hospitals, mm-hmm. and they're running into problems because they don't have the appropriate training in these facilities, and they should be being cared for in a skilled nursing facility, but people just don't want to move there because of the, you know, not many people want to live in, you know, that type of setting. They got a bad rap in the 70s.
Right, yeah. Right. What should consumers look for when they're selecting an assisted living facility?
Well, our website provides, and so does the state's website, the Department of Social Services, provides really good checklists on what you should look for. But there are a number of things that I can say that the most important thing, there's two things. One, to do your homework. When you're going on a facility's a tour, it's a marketing tour, and they're going to show you their best features. You know, we provide these types of meals. This is how nice our rooms look. We have a view. But they're not going to tell you that they have trouble logging their medications or other things like that. So it's important to review the public file. Review it before you go in there. It's available at the state agency. You can ask for it and read it and look and make a list of the needs that the resident is going to have. And then look at the estate evaluations and the complaints and see, you know, if this facility has trouble with medication management and my resident has a lot of medications, well, I'm not going to choose that facility. I'm going to move on to another facility that doesn't have that problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at the public file, the other thing is when you go in to look at it as you're looking at real estate, this is going to be someone's home. They're going to be living here day in and day out. So you want to see everything. You want to open up drawers. You want to see, you know, how organized the place is. You want to pull up mattress pads and look at mattresses and see the quality of the mattress. Feel the texture of the sheets. I mean, imagine that you're going to live here, and if the person giving you the tour is not responsive to this, that should be an indication that maybe this place isn't going to be able to communicate to you other more important things. Communication is super important once your family member is living in one of these places because they're the eyes and ears. They're providing the care. If there is a complication, you're going to want to know that they're approachable, that they're knowledgeable. You do want to test their critical thinking skills and their medical knowledge when you are on the interview or on the tour. You want to treat it as an interview. You are interviewing them more so than they're giving you a tour and trying to sell you something.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to the checklists and mm-hmm. the ability to review public files, can you give the website addresses for where listeners could find the checklist of things to look for when reviewing an assisted living facility?
Yes. So the Department of Social Services, their website is www.dss.ca.gov.
Okay.
And our website is www.rcfereform.org.
Okay, and that's all one word, rcfereform.org.
Correct. And there are other, I mean, you could also Google, you can Google anything these days, but, you know, checklist for assisted living facilities or what to look for. There's other information out there.
Okay. And then as far as a consumer's ability to review public files on a particular facility, where would they find that information?
You would have to find out the location of the agency in your area. So I'm here in San Diego. Well, it's called the Department of Social Services, and it's called the Division of Community Care Licensing. So you'd want to find your community care licensing office. And that is available. You'd have to call the state to find out where that location is. And you would go down there. You'd have to file a request. And it would take, I think they have anywhere from 3 to 5, maybe 10 days to produce the file for you because they have to remove confidential information. But if you are in San Diego, we have all the public files available for San Diego facilities on our website. We just haven't, there's 8,000 facilities in California total. Mm-hmm. So we haven't done all 8,000.
But you've done about 10%, right? Did I see 800 reviewed?
Yes. There are 800 facilities in San Diego and Imperial Counties, and we have all of those public documents for those facilities on our website.
That's fantastic. It doesn't sound like a super easy process to get that information. Can you request for multiple facilities at one time?
You can. The challenge, though, is that if you're just a regular consumer and you're coming in and you say, you know, I'd like to look at these 5 facilities, well, you come in and the idea would be that they would have all 5 files ready for you in a public viewing area and you'd look at it. But if a particular evaluator is at that facility on that day, it is not uncommon for you to show up and only get 3 out of the 5 and that you've got to come back. Mm. So it's pretty archaic, the system, which is what prompted us to start this website, was that, you know, this day and age, people have 3 days to place someone when they're getting discharged from the hospital and they need information, you know, right now.
In your review, in Carr's review of the 800 facilities in San Diego, I imagine there was a dramatic range in quality and performance. Did you develop some overall impressions about the facilities that you could share, or is that too difficult to make that kind of generalization?
No, I mean, there are some things, and I'll pick out the ones that are most consumer important, or most important to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll start with this, that when you are reviewing the public file, less inspections does not necessarily mean, or even less citations, less deficiencies, does not necessarily indicate better compliance or performance for a facility, because facilities are only required by the state to be inspected once every 5 years. So, and then they take a random sample of 20%, but that's 8,000 facilities, you know, throughout the state. So when you're reviewing the file, I would keep that in mind. If you're looking at a couple of them together and you see that, you know, this one's got 2 citations for this and then this other one hasn't been cited at all, but they haven't been visited for 5 years, well, I mean, you can only take from it what you can, but use a critical eye when you're reading this stuff and looking at it. So that was an impression that the files, I guess, were kind of incomplete and not as they should be to inform the consumer as much as they could. Another thing is that the narratives in the file, the LPAs, which are the licensing program analysts, they are the state evaluators that go out and perform the evaluations or investigate complaints. We found that their narratives are not as in-depth as a consumer would need them to be. They're not required to have medical training. So, again, I said these facilities are becoming mini hospitals, and so, you know, their documentation will be, oh, the water temperature's the proper degrees, the residents seem happy, the food looked good at lunch today, and they're in there for 2 hours out of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's so important for, you know, families to have a presence in these facilities so that they can, it doesn't guarantee good care, but you're working off of limited knowledge, limited, I guess, objective information, so you want, it increases your chances if a person is there. Like, I see that the complaints are, you know, if you complain, if there's a problem, they have to go out there. So you complain if there's a problem, so they go out there. Otherwise, they're only going out once every 5 years. That's a big trend that we saw, too.
That does not seem very often. I'm sure, like everything else, there's restricted budgets and restricted manpower, but that seems incredibly inadequate in terms of a review process. I want to remind everyone we're listening to Issues and Ideas on Public Radio KCBX. Our guest today is gerontologist Chrissy Selder. Can you talk a little bit more about the review process, Chrissy? Okay, so we know now once every 5 years, what are there requirements in terms of the topics that they have to cover in the reviews? Are there guidelines? It sounds like those reviews might be a bit cursory.
Yeah, well, I've never been through the academy, which is where the licensing program analysts go. I mean, there is an evaluator's manual, which I'm somewhat familiar with. I've tried to read. It's pretty thick. So I'm not a total expert on what they're required to do when they go in there. But just after reading as many files as I have had, I would say that they, you know, they come in and they are inspecting the cleanliness of the place, you know, whether there's odors, whether there's not odors, the look of the residents, do they look well kept, are they not, the quality of the food, does it look like it's nutritional, or is it just, you know, a piece of bread with cheese in it, or is there, you know, balanced diet. They check their medication logs, they check their personnel files to make sure that everyone has a criminal record clearance to be working there. They should be inspecting residents. The facility should be assessing residents, excuse me, annually. And so they check the resident files to make sure that that's in fact happening. So it really is monitoring whether they're following the regulations. they're not in there checking and monitoring the status of the residents. If a resident has, you know, a stage 2 bed sore, they don't necessarily document that and then follow up to see if it's become a stage 3 or stage 4, which can happen very rapidly, and then you've got a medical condition. They leave that up to the facility, and if that becomes a problem, it's called an incident, and their facility is required to file an incident report. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then they can get in trouble with the state. So the state's really just kind of like the police, making sure that they're adhering to these specific regulations, whether they're following the books. They're not really actively monitoring the well-being, so to speak, of the residents in the facilities, which I think is what a lot of families assume. I think they assume that there is a watchful eye on whether these, I mean, anyone can get a license to operate a facility like this in California. You just need, you know, 3 months operating costs up front and a high school diploma.
So that takes us to the reform aspect of all of this. What are CAR's objectives with respect to reform, and what would you like to see happen in California with respect to assisted living facilities?
For in a perfect world, I'd like them to, and in a nutshell, I'd like to feel comfortable living in one myself when I'm older. But what that means is, I think it's a challenge. I think, like you said, with these budgets, and you know, it makes it harder. But for starters, I mean, we have a policy platform on our website. For starters, we'd like to see more medical training, more substantial medical training for staff. We'd like to see nurses in these places. We'd like to see staffing ratios. We'd like to see the state hold people accountable, that if they cite them for a deficiency, they in fact have to pay that deficiency. That right now it's $150 for death and negligence.
That's not even a slap on the hand, barely.
No, right, and there's no proof, and at least the files we've been in, are there's not no proof. There's very little proof that these civil penalties are even collected. That proof might be up in Sacramento, but it's not in the files for public review. So that type of stuff, just more information for the consumers. We'd like to see the license changed so it's more consumer-friendly. All in all, we'd like all of it to be where it's the consumer is empowered, educated, and can make an informed decision, where there's transparency, where there's accountability, because it's right now, I don't want to be grim, but it's warehousing older adults. Mm-hmm. And as someone who looks forward to, you know, growing older and even with dependency issues, it shouldn't be where you're in fear, where it's, you know, all this stuff is happening behind closed doors because there's no federal funding right now. So, I mean, I hope I'm making sense.
You are. There's a lot there. We have just a couple of moments left. I would love you to give out the website address for CAR one more time and just briefly explain what it is in terms of a resource for KCBX listeners. And also, I just wanted to reiterate that CAR is a nonprofit. And how in fact, do you fund CAR? Chrissy.
Well, right now it's just on just on personal passion. Mm-hmm. My partner and her husband have funded the expenses that aren't able to be paid for through just hard work and intention. Mm-hmm. So we might have a grant in the pipeline through Aging Independent Services. So we're just getting started. We just launched our website in June, and it's just the two of us. So right now we're operating on slim margins.
All right. So give the website address again.
It's www.rcfereform.org, and we're just a watchdog advocacy organization that wants to inform consumers about this assisted living care option, giving them objective information.
Thank you so much, Chrissy. You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on Public Radio KCBX. I've been your host. I'm Katherine Johnson. And with us has been gerontologist Chrissy Selder talking about ageism, talking about her new book, When You're Older, children's book, and about how to evaluate and select an assisted living facility for your loved one. Thank you for your time today, Chrissy.
No, thank you so much, Kathy.